Welcome to the All Recovery Talk podcast, where we talk all things recovery and substance use related. We're your hosts. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Jennifer. This podcast was created for people in recovery, people with substance use disorders, allies of recovery, and everything in between.
Both Jennifer and I are in long-term recovery and work at the only nationally recognized recovery community organization in North Dakota. Welcome, everybody, to this fourth episode. Well, could call it the fourth episode since episode three was two parts. So we'll call it the fourth episode.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it is the fourth episode. That is its own topic.
Fifth topic, or fourth topic, fifth episode.
Whatever, we'll go with that. It's the fifth episode, fourth topic.
It can be whatever we want. We get to make the rules.
Yep. So on today's episode, we are going to be discussing Jennifer's trip to Washington, D.C. for her Rural Fellowship Development Grant through the DOJ. Correct?
That was close.
Oh, well, you know, that's why you went and I didn't.
I suppose.
So, what was it then?
It is, I was at a conference for the Reaching Rural Initiative, which is sponsored by COSUP, which stands for the Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Use Program, which is a part of the Department of Justice Assistance, Bureau of Justice Assistance. And there's lots of other partners on it, like the CDC, the Institute for Intergovernmental Research, RULO Strategies, all sorts of government.
Bigwigs.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I think.
So, what did this conference entail, ma'am?
Well, so I guess we could talk about what Reaching Rural is first. So, Reaching Rural is a fellowship program offered through COSUP, where they essentially, it's a year-long collaborative solution program that I am an individual fellow in. It's essentially this program for leaders and communities that are looking to help solve the substance use problem in the country.
That sounds very interesting.
It is interesting. It's a lot.
So what comes at the end of this development program?
Well, I guess we'll see in February 2025.
Oh. More to be revealed.
Yeah. But it really is the government investing a lot into our community. It might be me that's the one that's going and doing these things, but it's them investing into our community because we're worth it.
Well, yeah, if you can't hear, we're joined by our special guest, who's probably going to be a weekly occurrence, little Kevin. He's just singing away down there in his chair.
He's just so excited to hear about all the things we're doing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He's just so excited for the future.
He is. Maybe we can solve addiction before he grows up, you know, 10 years or so.
Yeah, we'll find the cure. Everybody will want to take two.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah. So, now this conference. So, what did you all do during this conference? And what type of people were at this conference? More along the lines, this would be a good question to answer, is the type of people that are involved in this.
So, everyone who attended as a participant of, you know, a fellow of Reaching Rural is from a rural community. I forget which government agency had to define it as rural, but everyone is in a small community. And there were, so there are individuals who applied, and I am one of those people. There are currently 14 individuals and 9 teams. And those teams are cross-sector teams made of all sorts of different types of people. There are judges, lawyers, lots of probation officers, other law enforcement officers, healthcare representatives, treatment professionals, public health. Did I already say that? Public health professionals, and peers. And some of the peers are also, you know, lawyers and healthcare professionals and other things too.
That's great, you know, because just because you are an addict doesn't mean you can't be a lawyer.
Yeah, I think that was the most impressive part of the whole thing.
Seeing addicts being in such a professional manner.
Yeah. Yeah, the first day we did this activity, everyone introduced themselves, which was kind of a lot, because there were a lot of people there, not just fellows, but there's also, I think, 10 faculty that come from rural areas that do different things, elected officials, judges, stuff like that. But the amount of people that are in recovery and doing great things, like, this was not a recovery event. This was like a professional event.
Mm-hmm.
But
there was a whole lot of recovery there.
A whole lot of recovery. Yeah. So many people in recovery. And you can tell because they're the ones with the tattoos.
Oh. Oh, okay. Cause...
Or the ones outside smoking.
Yeah.
Okay. One or the other.
Oh, okay.
Or both, if you're me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, what were some of the things that you did at this convention?
Convening.
Wow. Well, folks, that's it for today. You know, they convened. That's all you need to know. No, I digress. She reads her agenda on what they did because she don't remember.
My goodness, this was so jam-packed with so many things. I mean...
Yeah, what time did it start?
Started at... So 7:30 a.m. is when breakfast started, but 8:30 a.m. is when things really took off.
Until when?
Till 7 p.m.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
Jam-packed full of PowerPoints?
No.
Oh, no death by PowerPoint?
There was only a couple of PowerPoints.
Oh, that's my type of convention. I should have went.
It was really, I mean, really, truly, it was so different than...
So an interactive convention.
Very interactive, yes.
Oh, see, that's my type of place.
Because that's what this whole thing is about.
Yeah, I'm not a death by PowerPoint type guy, unlike you, who just loves them.
I love me some PowerPoints. I really do.
It's the most boring thing you ever have to attend is death by PowerPoint.
Yeah, so for those of you listening in early recovery, if you want to be a professional, just be prepared.
Yeah, lots of PowerPoints.
So fun.
Yep.
But I guess the coolest thing that we got to do was really meeting other people who are trying to do the same thing and seeing recovery across the country. Like, people really care. It's truly amazing to see, you know, a room full of 75 people working to create solutions, and then all of the professionals on the other end helping us with it. Every single person there was there to help people like us. That's why they're doing what they're doing. That's why they took the week off from their jobs to go to this conference that to be quite frank, everyone thought was going to be so much boring than it was. So much more boring. And they're all just, they're just trying to help people find recovery. That's the whole thing. It's truly, I don't even have a word for it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, it's a very beautiful thing to have so many professionals, like in the aspect of judges and probation officers and lawyers and that type of stuff, trying to come together in order to find a solution to this epidemic that we currently have and have had for many, many years called addiction. You know, to have a common ground, you know, in this realm, to hit it from all aspects, from the justice side, from the boots on the ground side, coming together, you know, and communicating, you know, because, I mean, in my experience, you know, working with probation officers is one thing, but trying to work with the court system, well, that's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
You know, having gone through the justice system, you know, in active addiction, I wish I would have had some people like this, you know, in my corner, you know, like having drug court. I wish I was able to, you know, qualify for that. But due to my charges being violent, I couldn't qualify for drug court, even though, you know, I begged and pleaded with the judge that, you know, the reason I am this way is because I'm an addict, man. Like, I'm not normally just this person that, you know, holds people hostage at gunpoint when he's not messed up.
You don't?
No, not generally.
I haven't done that in a few years.
No, I've never done it until the one time I was high on drugs. You know, so having people like that to be able to advocate for you, that's going to be huge in the future. But yeah, so I'm reading through this agenda that they had, which that was a very jam-packed convention from what I'm understanding and reading.
Only 10 minutes to go outside and smoke.
Wow.
Like, that's not enough time. Takes 7 minutes for a cigarette. How are you supposed to use the restroom?
That checks out. So, what's this disc work of leaders? Disc model? What's a disc model?
Oh, you've done it before. I made you do a disc. It is, oh gosh, what is it? I don't think this is something that we really want to talk too much about. It is a flexible way of evaluating your personality and...
Oh, is that the questionnaire?
Yeah, interpersonal.
Oh, the question. Oh, so it's a questionnaire to figure out. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So in essence, it is a questionnaire that you answer, and then there's a answer sheet that the individual that's administering it goes over, and it'll give you answers on how to work with the individual based off of that.
Well,
in essence,
it's a leadership kind of thing is what it is, but it could be used for participants, and it's, you know, interesting.
Yeah. I see evidence-based strategies for reducing overdoses. Outline programs, practices, and policies. Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I think the most one of the most important takeaways was is that that there are people. You know, we tend to think that judges, probation officers, law enforcement officers, sheriffs, wardens of jails, all of these people,
mm-hmm.
we tend to think that they're out to get us, but those are the people that were in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Every day trying to make a difference, and they're committed to spending hours every week of their personal time to make a difference. And that's huge.
Yeah, that is extremely huge. So I'm looking here, day two, there was pure voices, nothing about us without us. And I'm reading this, reading through these speakers, and it just happens to be Miss Jennifer Perdue, the executive director of Monetary Recovery Community Organization. So there was a panel of peer recovery professionals on the value of peer recovery positions. How did that go?
It went well. Yeah.
How well did it go?
It went so well that multiple of the teams who didn't already have peers on their teams, they got some peers on their team. We got to talk about our own experience as people in recovery, and I got to talk about you a little bit because you're a different peer than I am, a little. Give opinions.
Oh.
All sorts of stuff. And you know what? It was like everyone's favorite part because I must just be so cool. Or like
that you are.
Or like,
or was
maybe
it you're
because
talking about me.
Or like maybe because one of the other people on the panel is like fairly well known or something. I don't know. You know, he worked at the jail that Netflix show that just came out is about.
Oh, which one was that? Oh.
I'm not going to tell you on the podcast.
Oh, I see who that was. The first guy. Starts with an R. Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. So that's very moving that after this panel that, you know, all the professional teams that came there ended up including peers onto their teams because of how much value that they've seen that peers can add to their teams.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing that just hearing, you know, our experience made that big of a difference. And it's true. And I got to talk about and continue to talk about how much I need to, you know, even as a person in long-term recovery, I still need to talk to people with living experience, people who are currently going through the barriers, because things are different now than they were in 2019. And everybody's experience is different. And so it's so valuable to not sit up on our chair in long-term recovery or as a professional or whatever and just assume that we know what's best for people. And that's where peers come in. But it's also, even as peers, we have to make sure that we aren't disconnected from the recovery community.
That's definite. You got to always stay connected with what's current, you know. I always try to stay current with what's happening out there in the streets.
Stay hip, you know.
Yeah. As they say, stay hip as I get older. You know, stay cool. And I stay current with that by asking, you know, hey, how's drugs out there? How's the drug scene? You know, gotten any better? Generally, the, you know, consensus is, no, it's gotten worse. Drugs have gotten worse, you know.
When's the last time you asked someone that?
Oh, not that long ago, actually.
I don't think I've ever heard you actually ask someone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I hear you talk about asking people all the time.
Yeah, I do it all the time, actually, because especially with people that I used to use with, that I see, you know, that are still out there. It's just like, hey, the drugs gotten any better? Nope.
I suppose, yeah.
Gotten any cheaper? Nope, more expensive. And due to inflation, you know, Bidenomics, you know, things are still the same. Same pain and misery. So that's I like that, you know, that these professionals, you know, that are seeing the value in what peers bring to the table. You know, because we have not only that lived experience, but we have that, you know, that drive, you know, to want to do better for not only us, but for others.
Right. And we're some of the only people that can really, you know, talk to someone and say, I really, truly understand.
Mm-hmm. The rapport, the ease of rapport building by a peer support specialist with an individual is doesn't compare. Like, I don't think a profession can compare to how easy it is for us to build a rapport with somebody.
I think that there are some professionals, you know, who have relevant experience, whether, I will say, whether it's with, you know, substance use or like there's a professional that I know that like had a similar experience with parenting, you know, and so was able to relate with that. So it's not just that peers are valuable in this, but addiction is a unique thing. And so,
mm-hmm. Well, I think it's more along the lines though of the individuals that we work with that don't see us as the professional. Like, you know, they meet me and they go, oh, you're just an addict. And then they meet a professional and they're like, ooh, no, I don't want to talk to you because you're a professional. Even though we are professionals as peers, but they just, you know, individuals don't see us in that light because it's, you know, I don't go, yeah, I'm Kevin and I have a PhD and, you know, peer support specialist. As a peer support specialist, I don't have that degree. I have a certification, you know, so I'm not looked at in that same light as like an LAC or something like that or a doctor. So I for me, it's always been easier to build that rapport with individuals.
Yeah, it makes sense. We one of my participants calls me her more adultier adult.
Yeah.
And that's just
more adultier adult, huh? That's different, but yeah. Sure, we'll go with that. So, what else did you guys discuss?
Oh gosh. So much. I got the chance to learn from so many different people and just do so many different things. And I will say, okay, so the sessions were incredibly helpful. Absolutely. But I think I learned more from like the time spent outside smoking and the time, you know, really interacting with the other people who are working on this than not more, but
relevant information.
Like what I remember without having to look at notes is from the personal conversations that I had, you know? And you know, one of the people, so we played trivia one night, right? And on this trivia team, it was me, a person with extensive, with a background in the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. an extensive background yep, yep. there as a peer, a person from Hawaii with 37 years clean, and a treatment court judge.
Treatment court. Huh. Is it like drug court?
I cannot answer any questions about that currently. Hmm. Need to do some research.
I have to do more looking into that. That sounds treatment court. Sounds interesting.
It does. I'll
dive more into that in a later episode or something.
But right, it's me and someone who, you know, spent most of his life in prison another person with lived experience on a team with a judge. Mm. Right. And, yep. and we just had the most fun. My team won, in case you were wondering. Got a little paperweight.
Yeah. Oh, a paperweight, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
weird,
I don't know.
Weird you call it that.
Says you're the best. But it was so cool to be able to, you know, as a person in recovery, with that lived experience of using substances, to sit next to a judge and play trivia together. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't happen, right?
Generally not, no. I don't know of really any other instances where you're playing trivia with judges as a recovering addict.
Right.
Unless the judge is a recovering addict themselves.
Which happens, yeah.
I mean, that does, yes.
But it just, it's so cool to kind of break down, you know, those barriers were really broken down.
Mm-hmm.
We're all just people.
Yep.
And also, like, being in recovery for a decent amount of time means that we can be comfortable playing trivia with a judge and not see them as a judge.
Yeah, it's just an individual.
Yeah. Just a really cool person who chooses not to use drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can when you're a judge, probably.
Probably frowned upon.
I would guess so. Yeah.
Especially a treatment judge.
Hey, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I've never worked in a court, so there's that. But yeah, all of the people in recovery doing amazing things and owning their own businesses, working for healthcare systems, not necessarily as a peer support, just all of these amazing things. And one person she's the overdose prevention specialist for her local public health as a person in recovery. And like seeing all of the things that people can do and seeing the value that they can bring, not only as a person in recovery, but as a professional, it gives me so much hope. Like any one of us can do anything.
Oh yeah. We're the most resourceful people you'll ever meet.
Yeah. It's really cool. And it's the same across the country. You know, nobody else was from North Dakota.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely no one else from North Dakota. Got a lot of, what do you guys do up there?
Oh, that place exists?
I said most people do drugs.
Yeah, that checks out.
But.
I mean, yeah. Not many. That place really does exist. You guys ride carriage and wagon still? Still ride on horses up there?
Only sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only during the summer, sir.
Yeah.
It's nice out when we get traction.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, so what else did they discuss? A lot of these places were from RCOs, correct?
There were definitely some RCOs there, yes.
Which, for you out there, RCO stands for Recovery Community Organization, which, like we say in our intro, we are the only nationally recognized recovery community organization in North Dakota.
And now SAMHSA recognized.
Oh, and now SAMHSA even. Wow, we're moving on up to the big leagues. You were talking, we were discussing how pretty much every state besides North Dakota funds recovery community organizations.
Right.
What is that about?
I guess I'm going to have to do some more talking with these people, but so how it started. So we find our own people. Right? Like, mm-hmm. That's a thing that we're pretty good at in recovery.
Yep.
I couldn't do it right away, but, like, at the morning that it started, like, being outside smoking, of course, kind of found my people, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, we introduced ourselves, talked about RCOs, and then I had, you know, some practical questions for these people because they've been doing the thing, one person for over 10 years and another for 20.
Yeah.
And then there were other people sprinkled in there. And so I was asking them for advice and suggestions from their experience. And I found out that they're funded by the state and that RCOs are like the place to go for recovery, mm-hmm. in their states. Specifically, the people that I talked most with were from Georgia, New Hampshire, and Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a little bit of discussion with Minnesota as well. And it just, peers are looked at as, and so just to define a recovery community organization a bit, it is run by people in long-term recovery. You have to have lived experience in order to have an RCO. And so it really truly is meant to reflect the recovery community in your community. And all of these places, you know, they were included in their teams because they're well regarded, because they are the ones that, like, the authority on recovery kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really that, but, like, if you want to know about recovery, you go to the RCL. You don't go to an addiction counselor. You don't go to a therapist, a policymaker, whatever. Not that they can't help, but you go to the RCL, and that's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, I suppose, because, you know, going to an RCO to find out about recovery, well, that's what we do is recovery. Now I go to treatment to find out, you know, or to work on my substance use. You know, I learn things while I'm in there about my substance use, but I'm not really learning about recovery and what recovery is going to entail.
Right. You learn how to get clean.
Yeah.
And then the RCO peers, all of us, you know, whatever phrase you want to use for it, we're the ones that take you from getting clean or getting into recovery to wherever you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Take you in essence, take you from getting clean to now living.
Right.
Living life without the use of drugs.
Right. Really, truly finding recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And what recovery means to you. And that's pretty powerful that so many places have embraced that.
Yep. Yep. And as you know, in you know, Midwestern fashion, we're like, you know, 3 years behind everybody else who checks out.
You know, we may be behind, but that just means that there's glass ceilings to break.
Yeah, that does check out, and I like to throw rocks, so there's that. So, you know, we can, you know, and it also allows us to be able to not reinvent the wheel.
Right.
When it comes to figuring these things out, you know, what does it look like to have a state-funded RCO? I've known that Minnesota has funded their RCO since we took our trip across the United States to the different RCOs that we went and visited, you know, when we were first getting Marco off the ground, you know, in a providing services aspect. You know, because before we were originally created just to never provide services is what we were originally created for. We were just created to, in essence, locate the gaps and fill those gaps with different resources that our community provided.
I'm a little confused about, and we can maybe talk offline about that, but we were also created as an RCO maybe a little while later, so that's
yes,
a little confusing.
So and that's originally our grant was written in the aspect that we identify the gaps and in essence plug those gaps with the different resources that the community has. Hmm. So and in essence us doing so come to find out that there is nothing to plug that hole with. So then it became, well, what do we do? You know, and I had the bright idea, why not provide the services? Well, we're not supposed to do that. Well, you know, you can't plug a hole with nothing, you know.
Right.
The water's just going to keep coming in and the boat's going to sink if you can't plug the hole. So why not at least put your finger in there?
Right.
You know, as long as we weren't doing, and we ended up talking with the grant provider about that. And they said as long as we aren't providing, clinical services.
Right.
Yep. That we would be fine, and which we don't. We provide peer support services, and care right. coordination, which is not a clinical aspect.
Right.
So that's how we went from just identifying gaps to plugging those gaps.
Right.
So, you know, that's something that I hope we can get figured out, you know, is getting the state to be able to fund RCOs. you know, because I think that would be very beneficial, you know, to a lot of different rural communities, you know, that, yes, we have Free Through Recovery, Community Connect, and now 1915i, but that those are just programs to help assist people. Whereas, you know, my envision of, you know, Marco eventually is that we have a community center, you know, like a lot of the places that we went and visited that had the community center along with the RCO, you know, so that there was computer labs, there were people, there was kitchens to help teach people how to cook, you know, there was, you know, teaching people how to do laundry, things like there was a whole laundry list of things that, you know, these RCOs did, you know, that people that are in addiction never think about learning how to do.
Right.
Because they don't have that luxury of doing laundry or cooking, you know, because a lot of people are homeless in active addiction, you know, unless you're very fortunate to, you know, be functioning, but eventually you get to a point where you're not, or you have family that, you know, allows you to continue to use like mine did, you know, or support you during your active addiction in ways that they pay your rent or things like that. You know, but a lot of people aren't that fortunate for things like that. You know, so having assistance, you know, from the government, you know, to be able to reach more people, you know, reaching rural. Here we are, you know, reaching the rural, you know, in a way that we can't do it on our own.
Right. And I think, I really think that this RCO thing, being a recovery community organization, it means a lot. It means that we get to represent our own community.
Mm-hmm.
Because Minot is different than Fargo, which is different than Bismarck or yep. Grand Forks or Newtown or yep. or Towner or, you know, whatever. It's all different.
That it is.
And that's what RCOs are all about. Yeah, it's really truly this cool, unique thing that in North Dakota we don't have enough of right now.
Yep, it's just us that are accredited by ARCO.
We are ARCO members, yes.
Or whatever, yeah.
We are certified RCO.
There you go, yeah.
We are not yet accredited because they just came out with an accreditation that is different than the certification that we received.
Well, eventually, hopefully one day, we will be accredited.
We'll be working on it very soon.
Yeah. But we are currently just nationally known members of ARCO.
Right.
Which is the affiliation of Recovery.
Alliance,
there we go. Too many acronyms, man. Just too many acronyms.
There's so many acronyms.
I need cheat sheets. With that being said, you know, eventually, what else do we got coming down the pipeline?
For podcasts or for Marco?
Didn't we just receive notice from, wasn't it NDSU or UND?
Oh, let's maybe pause on that. It's UND that we have a letter of memorandum of understanding with for a grant for ESPERD. But we have to wait to see if they are funded.
Oh yeah. Yep, we're waiting on that. Yep, on that hopeful news that they received the grant so we can be providers for that program. Which that program is an assessment that is done at the hospital or at a doctor's office, in essence, like the suicide questionnaire, and then they get referred to us to provide services.
And help get them the treatment that they need.
Yep. Don't ask me what ESPERD stands for, because it's yet again another acronym that, you know.
Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment.
Or I can just ask Kid Wiz over here, who knows all these things, because she's so smart.
I just, you know, Gotta know what we're working on, man.
Yeah, that's why they pay you the big bucks, and I just do the podcast. So I'm just a podcast guy, and I just, you know, do some other things around the office. But, you know, she's the one going to Washington, D.C., and, you know, meeting with all the big wigs and the lawyers and the judges, people with PhDs, and being on panels and stuff like that. Because they don't want me. I'm just the lonely podcast guy.
They would have absolutely wanted you. You didn't want that.
That checks out. Yeah. I don't have any issue speaking in front of a panel of addicts, but that's too professionally for me.
You would have done fine, but you would have been too afraid there would be too many PowerPoints. That's why you would have never done it.
Yeah, I do really do hate PowerPoints with a passion. And it's not necessarily the PowerPoint. It's the fact that they sit there and read what they have put on the screen like I'm illiterate and I can't read it. That's the part that really gets me.
It's not really how it's supposed to go, but some people definitely do it that way.
Yeah. It's just like, just click through the slides, you know, and I'll read through the slides and thank you. I don't want to read and listen at the same time. If I wanted to do that, I'd just get an audiobook.
Yeah.
You know, so, but anywho.
What are we thinking? I guess, since you asked, what do we have coming down the pipeline? What do we have coming down the pipeline as an RCO? Have we even talked about what Marco is?
No, we haven't. We can do that on the next episode.
Yeah.
We can discuss what Marco is. So I think the call of action today will be self-care. Yep. Do something for yourself today that normally you would not do. Whether that's take a long bath, bubble bath, you know, take a couple extra minutes in the shower, sing in the shower when you normally wouldn't sing, you know, make yourself some dessert or something. Treat yourself, you know, something nice today. You know, because you deserve it. You know, you're a walking miracle. You know, all of us need self-care, even if we're, you know, addicts or not. You know, everyone needs that mental health day, you know, so that they can not get burnt out. Because who likes to be burnt out? I don't.
No, I don't think many people do.
Nope. And it's a, you know, this line of work, it is a very real thing. And it's, you know, it's easily missed that's what's happening in this line of work, is that one's getting burnt out until, you know, they finally realize it when it's, more often than not, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So today's call of action is self-care. Do something nice for yourself. Next week's episode, we'll be discussing Marco a little further. And then I think we're also going to discuss, what does recovery mean?
Cool.
Yeah, it sounds like a good combo. You know,
You know, maybe if we go real crazy, maybe we will have a special guest talk about RCOs.
Oh?
I don't know. I guess.
Oh, do you know some people?
I guess I might know some people.
Oh, you might have met some people?
I might have met some people.
Did you make some friends?
A little, yeah.
Oh, well, if nobody can see this, but I'm chalking one up in the air because my wife met some people that she can say are friends that aren't people from the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous here.
I know. It's amazing.
And they're professionals. So that's a double mark.
Yeah, and they're like not children or dogs either.
That's a triple mark for that.
Yeah. It's truly amazing.
Two gold stars.
At least two. I should really get five.
Overachiever much?
I should
much,
get as many as I want, actually. I mean, that's, you know, I need all the gold stars.
There's the addict. There it is.
Yep.
Two wasn't good enough. I need five or all of them.
Yep. All the gold stars.
Yep. Uh-huh. So tune in next week. when we talk more about what is Marco, what are RCOs?
And who knows what else, since we were all over the map on this one.
Yeah. What does recovery mean? I don't know. We'll find out. What does recovery mean? I guess we'll have to find out next week.
I guess.
See you all next week. Have a good weekend.